Cracking Copy is a marketing and copywriting podcast where we lift the lid on writing for business and read between the lines of effective copy.
This is a podcast for creative entrepreneurs and savvy business owners like you who understand the value that great copy can bring to their bottom line.
We dive into a different aspect of writing for business in each episode, debunk the myths about how we should write, and explore the ways that writing can be fun, conversational, and creative, while also being high impact for serious results.
So listen, laugh, and learn with us, Ella Hoyos and Minnie McBride, as we share our words and wisdom in each snack-sized episode. Expect some light bulb moments, interesting guests, and practical takeaways as we crack the copy code together. Welcome to another episode of Cracking Copy. In this episode, we are talking about launching and launch copy. So if you're looking to launch a course or a product, what do you need to think about in terms of marketing collateral and messaging? Today, we're going to be looking at the customer journey from building awareness to the buying stage and what you'll need to create and what you'll need to communicate. I'm Ella Hoyos and I'm with Minnie McBride.
Yes, hello. I think one of the biggest surprises for me when we were launching our course was there's so much more than you think involved in it. And I think as copywriters involved in a client launch, so a client contacts us and we're given a brief and we write the collateral, so we're writing maybe the landing page, the sales page, email sequences, you know, we then just hand it over, voila, and then that's it. But, you know, having now been involved in our own launch, I think you and I now have a far greater insight into what's involved. You know, all of the areas where messaging is important, you know, for example, for our course, we have our course provider and the amount of words that you need to provide for that too. Yeah. And also, I think we discovered that, you know, there was tweaking our messaging along the way as well. We were tweaking it. It wasn't just like done and that was it. In this episode, we want to tell you what we did, what worked, and how we could have done it better for next time we launch.
Yes. So in this episode is our very own case study on our very own launch. Our course called Launch Your Indie Podcast went live about 3 weeks ago. We're going to talk today about what we did using our own launch as an example, how we researched it, how we planned it, and how we delivered it. And we're doing this with our copywriter hats on to show you just how much copy goes into a launch. Of course, there's much more than just the copy, as we realised. And I think we'll touch on that too. But first up, we've got the research stage. You know, when you're looking to launch an online course or product, well, what do you need to do in advance? Well, first of all, you need to have a great idea. And I think the idea of launching my own course and our own course, because I've done it with Minnie, came up some years ago when I started taking online courses and started getting involved in online education for myself. I'd always loved the idea of one day launching my own course. But at the time, a few years ago, I had no idea what that might look like, what that might be, what I could teach on. When Minnie and I launched our podcast, Cracking Copy, back in 2022, we did it single-handedly. We learned what we needed to. And about a year ago, when we were sort of strategizing on where to go next with our podcast, what direction to take it, we felt we needed to speak to other podcasters and peers who also have a podcast. So we looked for, in our own communities, about bringing together some other podcasts so we could bounce ideas around and find out from them what they were doing with their podcast so that we could, you know, learn. So we're part of the Tech Pixies community. That's how Minnie and I met, through about learning through social media. And it's an online course and community helping women who to retrain in social media marketing and skills so that they can either start a business, change careers, or find a job and return confidently to the workplace. So that was our community. And we looked there for other podcasters. We put a word out to find other podcasters. And what we actually ended up doing was attracting people who were thinking of starting a podcast. So people who didn't have their own podcast, but were interested to hear about our journey and how we did it. So we created this thing called a Star Pod, where we met every couple of weeks. To sort of share our experiences and swap tips. And we did actually, to be fair, we had a couple of podcasters in there, didn't we, Minnie?
Yeah, we did.
But for the majority of people were just curious about what we'd done. So we realised that really what we were doing was teaching people about how we started our podcast rather than getting tips about how to grow our podcast. And that is really where we came up with the course idea for Launch Your Indie Podcast. We figured, well, hey, we could create a course. We know enough about this subject to teach other people. And that's how we developed our idea.
Yes. So once we had our idea, we then had to have a little think about, I guess the next stage is really probably setting our launch goals. So working out what it is that we want to achieve. And I think our goals really to start with, I don't think were that ambitious. We decided to see if there was an interest out there. We kind of had an inkling that there was, because obviously we'd been in this star pod. And we were thinking, okay, so why don't we run a beta version, a test version, just to see, well, to test our theory, really, because we thought that there was. And let's see what happens. And so just to let you know where we were at the beginning, on our social media, we do not have thousands of followers. I have less than 1,000 followers. Ella has less than 1,000 followers. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
That's on Instagram. On LinkedIn, I've got even less because my network's so old. I don't know. I think you've got a much more.
I've got a few more. Yeah, I've got a few more now. But we're active on LinkedIn and Instagram predominantly.
Yes, we are active there. And neither of us have big email lists. So we knew that it wasn't going to be like a get rich quick scheme, basically.
Yeah, this was never going to be a 6 or 7 figure launch at the outset. But it wasn't really about that either. We just wanted to test our idea, see if it worked, see if we've got what it takes, and actually go through the motions of putting a course together so that we could create a product that we could sell, a sort of one to many type product. So at the moment, as copywriters, we exchange our personal time in relation to, you know, one client at a time. There's only so much we can do with that. But to create a digital product or a course, we can actually serve several people at the same time. So it's a great new revenue stream to add into our respective businesses.
Definitely. And also, I think it adds to our skill set. And, you know, you and I both have the attitude that, you know, I do love the quote, you know, from small acorns, mighty oaks do grow. And I do think that we're all about building in public. And so it's about the journey we're committed to. And so this is part of a journey. And so trying new things and doing it in a public, I mean, I suppose it's quite risky, but, you know, at the end of the day, we felt we had got, you know, we'd done the research. We're going to come onto that a bit more, the market research that we did. But we felt that there was an idea and we went for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but with very little in terms of, you know, we didn't have thousands of followers. We didn't have a massive email list. And some people do. And actually, how brilliant.
Yeah, how brilliant if you've done that list building work that we all know in theory we should be doing.
Yes.
But we definitely wanted to validate this idea. And if it works, then we'll do it again. And we'll do it again, but next time better. So that's where we're starting from. And it's a great place to start. And I'm glad that we pushed on through with it as well. So in the beginning, we did some customer research. So we now knew that there were a pool of people who were interested in starting a podcast. So we asked them if they would hop on a call with us. And this was so that we could ask them some questions, get some insights from them about where they were in their own life and business journey, what challenges they were facing, what words they were using. What might they need? You know, what might they want if they were thinking about starting a podcast? What might they need from a course? So this was really helpful in terms of us piecing together a bit of a plan and a strategy, which leaned into the demand, where what people wanted. So we always think, you know, the audience has to come before the offer. If there's no demand for what we are trying to achieve, then there's no point in doing it. So that was the point of the research, just to dig a bit deeper there. One thing that we came across later on in the process, actually, when through the writing the sales page, is we need social proof and testimonials. in order to launch a course? I mean, if somebody doesn't know who we are, why would they invest in somebody that they don't know? So we really needed social proof and testimonials. And we thought, well, how the heck? I mean, for a long time, I don't think we realized it was a problem until it came to writing the sales page. And then it was like, how the heck are we going to get testimonials when we've never done this course before? And that's when we realized, well, hang on, we have been doing some warm-up stuff. You know, we have been running this StarPod group over a period of months, and people actually have had some experience of working with us and listening to us, getting tips and advice from us. So we went back to those people who are in our original community group of podcasters and podcast newbies and asked them, would you be willing to support us? Would you be able to, you know, tell us what it's like to work with us and give people a feel? And actually, I was blown away because people were really happy to do that. And we got a few really nice quotes and comments that we could use in our marketing materials.
Yeah, it was lovely. And we can't thank them enough because they, you know, we didn't hold them to ransom or anything. They just said nice things and it was lovely. Really nice. Yes. And encouraging.
It was great and really helpful in terms of then us going on to market and sell our own course.
Yeah. And it gave us a nice boost. So the next stage, I guess, was our planning. And I think, as Ella said, it's been an idea that's been evolving for a while. And I don't think I want to go into actually talk about launch planning in detail, but suffice to say, you can't launch without knowing who your audience is, what you're selling. So our research massively helped with this. And we would encourage anyone looking to launch anything, do your research first. In terms of sharing ideas, because there's two of us, we tend to use Google Drive and Trello. Those are the sort of software that we use. But looking at the tactical plan, what did we have in the mix? So we just thought we'd give you an overview, actually, of what we did. And then we'll take each in turn. So like top of the funnel, you know, we did social media. We did organic social media. We didn't this time do any paid. We did talks and collaborations, free workshops and a private podcast. Our messaging was very much, have you got a podcast in you? That was kind of the line we were taking and why you should have a podcast. So those were the kind of two things, I suppose, that we were sort of educating and asking. Then we had a landing page and then a sales page and an email sequence. So that was kind of the mix that we had.
Yeah. And all these elements had a copywriting or a content writing component to them. The social media posts, we didn't do paid advertising, as Minnie said, but certainly any sort of email list building. And even I would argue when we did the top of the funnel activity, I took part in a collaboration, a bundle offer, which I'll talk about in a minute. But there is an element of I had to produce a giveaway, I had to produce materials for that. And so there's an element of writing in that. And even when we gave talks in our various community groups about podcasting and starting a podcast, again, we needed to script that out. So really there was copywriting in every step of the way. And there are a lot of words that you need to produce in a launch.
Yeah, definitely. Everything. So if we look at like the social media, that's a lot of messaging and also a lot of thought going into how are we going to communicate? How are we going to get through to people?
And I'm so glad that we had each other to bounce those ideas around as well.
Exactly. I mean, we did mainly Instagram and LinkedIn, didn't we? And collaborated together. So we would, you know, if I did a reel, then I would invite Ella as a collaborator to obviously double our exposure and reach. But, you know, actually the messaging, when you're starting something from scratch, takes a lot of thought and
energy.
And energy, but also testing. You know, when you're looking, is it, you know, how many people did it reach? Did they then click through? Did people comment? Yeah. You know, there's a lot to it.
Yeah. So with the talks and collaborations, I spent a little bit of time here before our launch. So we had, you know, I would say 3 months in advance of when we decided we were going to open the cart and actually sell our course, I started looking for ways to reach bigger audiences. So recognizing that Minnie and I didn't have a huge audience, it was like, well, what else can we do to get the word out there? And one of those things is to do collaborations with other people, and through their audiences, you can grow and reach, send out your message a little bit wider. So cast the net a bit wider. One of the things I came across before Christmas was a podcast promotional bundle. This was really interesting because it was my first time ever taking part in any sort of online bundle promotion. It was a great way to grow your list, your email list quickly, and a great way to, you know, to reach that bigger audience than you could do on your own. Mm. So bundles and summits, if you're not familiar with them, a bundle is probably an online giveaway of digital products and services. And a summit is usually a speaking event with lots of different speakers offering, you know, really valuable content on various topics. They're usually organized by some sort of industry representative or someone who's put their hand up to be a curator and gather a bunch of people with a similar sort of businesses with a common interest around a theme. So for me, this one was organized by Rosemary Callender, who's a podcaster, and she acted as a sort of curator for this bundle. And she invited people, she brought together a whole bunch of podcast entrepreneurs and business owners. I think there were about 30 of us in total who would be willing to sort of give away something valuable to a podcast audience. I decided to create a product about designing your cover art. I had opted to do a copywriting related giveaway, but she already had someone in that segment, so I had to think about something else. But podcaster cover art is something I designed for Cracking Copy, and I'm very familiar with Canva, so I thought, okay, well, I can create a product around that. And we give it away in return for a subscriber's email address. So that was really good. I built up, in a matter of days, built up quite a sizable email list, which was great, and everybody got a copy of my mini course tutorial, which was podcast related, but it didn't really speak too much to what the bigger offer was, because obviously as part of my rationale for doing this, I wanted to then funnel people from this giveaway into the Launch Your Indie Podcast course funnel, which actually turned out to be more challenging than I realized. And I think what I'd learned from taking part in this podcast bundle was it's a brilliant way to build up an email list, but you need time. And I did this in sort of January, it went live, and then we launched our course in February. There wasn't enough time to take those cold leads, people who didn't really know me, they just sort of downloaded the freebie, and warm them up and get them ready to be interested in Launch Your Indie Podcast. So it was an interesting exercise. I would do something like this again, but I would give much more time, build and nurture that new audience, because they do take time, and it's not fun to be sold to immediately as you join someone's email list and then to get a bunch of sales emails. So that was my learning from that.
Yeah, I think that was probably what we'd say for a lot of it. We were quite, not last minute, but there wasn't enough happening in the run-up. What we did in that sort of month and a half before was great, but we sort of needed more of it, didn't we? Because if we look at what we also did, is we also did a Podcasting for Beginners masterclass, which we did for free. Mm-hmm. And we did get quite a few people that signed up. So those that didn't make it live, they then got a recording. And the other thing that we did is we did a private podcast series. And that, again, is a good idea.
And a way of getting emails on our list, yes, giving away something valuable.
But again, that was great. I think we probably could have done more of that perhaps to the back end of last year and had a more of an easier ride in, rather than it being quite sort of, we're launching in February and then it started really in earnest in January, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think these are our sort of rookie learnings from a rookie launch. You know, it's our first time doing it. It was scrappy, wasn't it? I would admit it was scrappy. There was a lot of energy going into it at the time, but in hindsight, yes, we'd give ourselves much more breathing space and be more planned out. But these are all great learnings that we take on board
they are
into our next launch.
But what is a classic is, of course, when you're doing it for a client. So if a client comes to you and says, I want to launch a course, we'd go, oh, well, you've got to give it 6 months. And then you've got to do it like this. And then when we're doing our own, it's the same. We're doing
all
our
that
own.
Goes out the window.
Yes, completely out the window. It's really not great. But yeah, but it was good. So let's talk a bit more about what else we created. So we created a landing page, and that actually did go live quite a long time ago. I think it went live last summer, didn't it? Something.
Yeah.
And it was really, as we were talking about podcasting and podcasting for beginners and the potential of us having a course, then we were allowing people, we were sending people to get on our mailing list so that they would get more information. And again, we used it later in the campaign as a sign up for our free workshop and access to our free podcast series. So our landing page did evolve. And it's evolved again. So it sort of acted and evolved with us. So what I would say is to revisit your landing page so that it is doing what you need it to do at that time of your launch. Would you not agree?
Yes, absolutely. Ours ended up doing quite a few jobs for us in different stages. I definitely, you know, again, we designed it ourselves using the software that was available to us in MailerLite. I think we could take a long sort of look at that design and say, was it working for us? We had a very big hero section, if I remember, above the fold, which just had the words, do you have a podcast in you? And then you have to scroll down to get a little bit more detail to that. So I've definitely something to test and perhaps tweak and play with for the next iteration. But it did the job that we wanted it to do, which was to capture email addresses and build our small but mighty email list.
Yeah, and it was a good email list. You know, people on it were genuinely interested in podcasting, so it was a good list. So in terms of what we did, we were providing people with information and then they did want to know more. So, you know, from that perspective, I think it was a success. But I do think you're right, we need to look at it again. Just in terms of a landing page in general, what goes on it? What did you put on it? Well, obviously your unique selling point. You do need a headline and a headline to support it, or strap line, a hero image or a video. And I think you're right, we probably went a bit big on that. You then need to obviously put in your benefits, why they are going to be giving you their email address and what do they get in return, and how, you know, why it's going to be so great for them. It's also good to put social proof, but because we didn't have any to start with, I don't think we had any on ours, did we? So that would be a good thing to put on next time. Yeah, and obviously then a call to action at the end. So I think we did, as I say, evolved. It did a job, but I think we could get it to do a better job.
Yeah, it only has one job to do, really, and that is capture. Some people call it a lead capture page. It's got to capture the email address and to get people on your list. And to get all that information that Minnie just described in succinctly, ideally, you get that above the fold. So it's just a one glance and you get everything you need to know. And you'd say, yep, I'm happy to exchange my email address. And but it's difficult. It's a tall ask. But that's the job of a landing page. And once we had our landing page, then we were able to start sending emails and warming our audience up. But we'll come on to the sales page next, I think. Now, this is what we'd call bottom of the funnel activity. So this is where people are aware of us. You know, they're aware of the product and the service that we were offering, which is our online course. They're in a consideration stage. And the sales page is to take people who are considering whether they want to take part in this course, and to convince and to persuade and to compel them to actually act on that desire and to buy from us. So we wanted people to sign up to our course using the sales page. And the sales page is a long form piece of content, and it is connected to a shopping cart. So there is a mechanism there for people to actually hit a buy now button and to pay for the course and become members and students of Launch Your Indie Podcast. So we opted for a long form sales page because it does help to take that anticipation that we've, you know, started, that seed of an idea that people have got. Have they got a podcast in them? Yes, I think they have, but they need to know a bit more about it. And it gives people all the information that they need to make an informed choice about whether that this course was right for them. There are several ways that we could have approached the sales page, and we did give thought to a few of the different options. One option was sort of starting from scratch, building it out on our course hosting platform, Thinkific. They have what's called a product landing page, course landing page. We could have used that software. We could have used MailerLite, our email service provider, which we rebuilt the landing page with. But instead, we opted to, this was where we took a bit of a shortcut, we opted to buy a pre-designed template, which we could work with. And as last year I launched my website, flurrymarketing.com, I was already familiar with using Showit as a web hosting platform and working with sort of templates which you customize. And I thought some of the designs are really beautiful, actually. So Minnie and I decided that we wanted to choose something that mirrored the look and feel of our existing website, my existing website, which is built on a sort of drag and drop design tool powered by Showit. So we bought a template, and really this was a bit of a no-brainer because it saved us so many headaches on a design front. It was already beautifully designed. We just had to bring in our brand colors, our own images. And actually, by the time we had customized it and put in our own copy and tweaked it, it looked nothing like the original template, but it definitely felt very much like us. And it was really slick. I think it was really slick. And there is still something up there. If you put flurrymarketing.com into your web browser, you'll find a version of that, a truncated version of our sales page. So we weren't working from a blank canvas. This was a real help. And by the end of the process, it was completely bespoke anyway. And hopefully it sounded great too. So the words, we did have to put in all the words ourselves. And that was, that took time. That really did take time to write drafts, to sleep on it, to mull it over, to actually set that copy on the page. And sometimes that's when you realize you've got too many words or too few words, or you know, it's not in the right format, so you have to mess around with the formatting. So copy took several iterations, and we built the sales page in stages. And I know this from, I've done sales pages before for various clients. I've helped clients launch, and each sales page will have approximately 16 sections if it's a long form sales page. That would include a hero section. So this is what you see above the fold before you have to scroll. We then put our about us, a little bit about Minnie and I, recognizing that some people don't know who we are, so we needed to introduce ourselves. We then set some challenges, and this was sort of addressing people's pain points. So this is where we were leaning into the earlier customer research that we'd done. You know, what challenges were people facing? We wanted to lay it out there, and this is a very standard, very common copywriting framework is PAS. So you address the challenges, you sort of, P is for pain points, and then you sort of agitate, and then you provide a solution. And that's what we were trying to do there. So we had an introduction to the course. We had a course breakdown, giving people a bit more detail of what they would get from signing up. We had plenty of social proof and testimonials, like we mentioned earlier. We had a description about how the course would work, the sort of mechanics of it all, and a bit of a timetable to it, testimonials and reviews where we could get them. And we will layer those in for our next journey as well. But we did have something to go there. We spoke to the sort of transformation that people are going to get, the results that you get from taking part in Launch Your Indie Podcast. You would have a podcast within 90 days, but in as little as 30 days. That was our promise to people. And that was really important to emphasize that. Recently I heard my husband, who works in sales, he said, you're talking about sell the sizzle. You sell the sizzle, not the sausage. So you're telling, it's a common sales term. I hadn't heard it before.
I like it.
You know, it's the aroma, it's the flavor, it's this sort of, you know, it's that you're selling. It's what people are really going to get. You're not necessarily selling them, this is an online course and you've got to have this homework and these modules. So we spoke to that a lot. Then, of course, there has to be a pricing section. And this is often the first question that people will have when they're sort of considering taking a course or buying your product. It's how much does it cost? So that was in there. And then bonuses, you know, little extras that you'll get from taking sort of fast action. being part of our beta program, that was a big incentive because we offered it at a cheaper price. You know, next time it runs, it'll run more expensive. But because it was our first time and we knew it might be a bit glitchy, we're doing it as a special offer. So that was an incentive for people. Benefits of taking part, frequently asked questions, the sort of things that people were asking us, we had got in there and we could adapt that as we go because we were learning as we went. And the more conversations we had with people, the more questions that were coming up. So we made sure that all those were answered and addressed in our sales page. We spoke about the sort of access you have to the course, how long you'll get. And there was a guarantee there. So if it wasn't right for you, there's an opt-out clause. So really, this is a safety buffer to say there is no risk of signing up to our course. You know, if it doesn't work out, that's fine. And we had that guarantee in place. And we wanted to sort of say, speak to as well, is this right for you? It's that kind of box that you see on sales page templates, you know, this course is right for you if you are this person and this way inclined, da, 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 and this, it may not be right for you if you're at this stage in your business or you don't like this. So we had that outlined as well to make it really clear of whether it was going to be right for that particular person.
Yeah, I like that one. It seems to be less pushy to say that, because actually someone could say, oh, actually I'm not ready, or they might just say, yeah, but it's a really good offer. But at least you're not, it doesn't feel strong arm tactic sales.
It was important to us to be really honest and transparent about what people were going to get. We completely put our hands up and said, this is the first time we've launched this course, but we have this experience. You know, we wanted to reassure people, but we wanted to be realistic as well.
Yeah. And you know, it's been good. And then once we then got people booking in, that was great. So, but for those that hadn't, we did do quite a few emails. And as I think we said earlier, we didn't have a big list. But with the list that we did have, we did create a nurture sequence in the run-up to the course date to, you know, to warm up our list. So we didn't really start our email campaign until about a month before.
Yeah, 6 weeks before, I'd say.
Well, 6 weeks, yeah. But we didn't send very many emails out really until the last sort of 2 or 3 weeks, where in the last 2 weeks, it worked out at about an email a day. So that was quite a lot of email writing that we did in the run-up. But actually, I'm quite glad that we left it, because I think we then had got a, because it was the first time we'd run it, we then had a greater insight really into the kind of messaging that we wanted to convey in the emails.
So, and before that, we were trying to sort of second guess what we thought people would need to hear, but once we started getting some feedback in, it became much easier to plan those emails.
Definitely. And then it makes it easier for us next time, because we can have a look at obviously which emails, you know, resonated most, etc. So the sort of things that we were saying, well, we started off, obviously, Ella's talked about her podcasting bundle that she did. So we obviously were talking about that to our audience, because, you know, it was free and it was a really great opportunity for them. We did some what's happening emails and telling them about the up and coming course. And then there was the free workshop details as well. So we did have sort of news emails, I think, to start with, didn't we?
Yeah, and a fair few teasers. We were trying to tease in what was to come.
Yeah.
I don't think we did as much of that. You know, we could have started that much earlier, like you say. We could have started that last year to tease the course launch.
And then in that last 2 weeks, we would look at one thing in each email. So it might be, well, we would sort of an objection that someone might have, and a Q&A. Actually, I don't think we did a Q&A this time, but I think we might next time. You know, desires. So what is it that someone wants? So maybe really trying to tap into what people want and then what we can give them, you know, which will fit this desire. Then we did some benefit ones, we did social proof ones, and sort of like lessons that we've learned. So and some also some sort of quite personal ones in there too. And we were really pleased actually, because our conversion rate was well above average, wasn't it?
I did some number crunching afterwards, and our email open rate averaged at 67.7%. So that's well over half, if not two-thirds of people were opening our emails. each time we sent them. So that just spoke to the fact we had quite an engaged email list. That was really good. And then the other interesting stat was that we had a click-through rate of 9.9%. So that's click-to-open rate. So everybody who, if you opened the email, we had a sort of 10% chance of someone actually clicking on one of the links, which would take them to a sales page or to download out whatever resource that we were offering. So that's pretty good, because I think the industry average is between 2 and 5%. Is that right, Minnie?
Yeah, I think it's between 2 and 5. So again, that's, you know, we were pleased, because what we were saying was obviously resonating. It's just that we, you know, we didn't have a big enough list really to make this a big launch. But actually, I'm quite glad it wasn't. I think it would have freaked us out, wouldn't it, a bit?
Yeah, we're happy with the number of students that we have got on the course. It's very manageable, which is great. And yeah, what we've now got, of course, with all the emails that have been produced, we've got a whole range of subject lines we can test. I mean, we didn't do any split testing of our emails this time round, and we could have done that. So this is where you send out two variations of the same email and see which one gets opened most. And we didn't do much of that in this launch, but I think that's something we'll probably do a little bit more of in subsequent launches.
Definitely.
Certainly with all these emails now, with these 18 emails I think got written in the end, we've got a foundation that's laid that we can now optimize and iterate on, which is really good. The messaging may change, and we'll probably add in more emails. I actually think we had quite a modest amount of emails for a launch. There are plenty of course creators who send out way more emails than we did. But this is what was manageable and sustainable for us in this moment.
Yeah, I also, I mean, from a personal perspective, I get fed up with too many emails. So it's difficult, isn't it, how to gauge it, and you do need to do them, but you have, is there a line that you cross? I mean
what I do for clients often is would have some text at the top of each email to say, hey, it's launch week and you're going to be getting more than our usual amount of emails. If you want to opt out here but remain on our email list, do so you offer people a way to disengage from that launch email sequence if they feel like, look, this is not the right time for me. I love you guys, but I don't want to get embroiled in this, you know, tons of emails each day. So we weren't doing an excessive amount of emails. We didn't give people that clause to opt out particularly. I mean, they could have unsubscribed. I don't think many people did. Did anyone unsubscribe?
I think we had one unsubscribe actually, which again, I thought was really good, because it means that there were people who were happy to receive it and happy to read them, because we had such a high open rate. So, you know, I don't think we overdid it. And as you say, maybe we could do more. And, you know, I do think there's other things we could have done in terms of the nurturing process earlier. So had some more going back at the end of last year as well. Yeah. But, you know, as I say, if you like, lead generation stuff we were doing was this year. So it's just making it a longer lead in, isn't it?
Yeah, a longer launch runway, if you like.
Yeah.
A longer lead in time. Yeah. Okay. So let's just recap on what we did during our launch. So we created social media posts, lots of them. There was a landing page. There was a sales page, and there was a whole email sequence of approximately 20 emails. But in addition to that, there was also the talks and the top of funnel activity we did. So there was the bundle promotion where we created a lead magnet and product for that. There were talks where we scripted out our words before we went live, and there was just lots of different elements to the copy in that respect. But those are all the things that formed part of our launch runway. And of course, then there was a private podcast which had four special episodes in that as well. So yeah, definitely lots of writing involved.
Yeah, we were also invited into other communities. So do you remember we did a talk for Paula's Chat with Paula membership group?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
We were doing other things as well, which I think really helped again with getting our word out there.
Yeah, getting our word, developing our messaging. And often, you know, when we were doing several talks in different communities, we could repurpose the content of each talk and just make it bespoke to that audience. So
yeah,
So it wasn't all doing everything from scratch, but there was a lot of that as well. In conclusion, I would say that if, like Minnie and I, you're copywriters, I particularly specialise in launch copywriting and I work with a lot of course creators, but I'd really highly recommend that try and create your own course. Here's why. If you're making your money for other course creators and for your clients, well, you could be making that money and creating an impact for yourself with the skills that you've got. Also, you'll get a much better understanding of the challenges that your clients face because you likely will likely, we've experienced them firsthand now for ourselves, as in going through the motions of this course creation process. It's been a steep learning curve. It's been quite intense in places, hasn't it, Minnie?
It has, particularly the tech.
Yeah, the tech took some figuring out. And actually, we didn't mention, but we have had we had some help from our colleague, stroke friend, stroke client, Paula. We did a skill swap with her. She taught us about the back end and setting up the tech and the learning platform. And in return, we created some copy for a product that she was trying to sell. So it's really great of understanding all those challenges and all those puzzle pieces and how it all fits together. And it's really helped sort of optimize our own, you know, service now. Because we've been through this process, it's going to make us much more empathetic with our clients who are going through this as well.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely.
Yeah. And doing the course for yourself, you have opportunity to test your own strategies in your own funnels. And it's going to help us to deliver better results next time because we have something to work with now. And again, for our clients, we have been through this process, we'd be able to sort of help them test out their strategies. So basically, by launching a course, we are, you know, creating a product that then we can also serve several people at the same time. So it's a new revenue stream for each of us. And we're not suggesting create a course for the sake of it. Like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, this has been a few years in the background in my mind as to what would I ever teach about. But since Minnie and I have learned podcasting, it seemed like this is the perfect time to try.
Yes, and also doing it together, doing it with someone else, I think has, because it's sharing the load, sharing, you know, obviously it's sharing the spoils, but I think for a first course, I think it's been great to do it together, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose the biggest learning, I think, is building an audience is tough. You know, it takes time to bring in those new leads and it takes time to warm up an audience and get them to a place where they're ready to work with you. So that's been a really great learning. And, you know, you can be told this stuff until you're blue in the face, but until you've actually lived through that experience and made those mistakes for yourself and learned firsthand what it's like, I don't think the lesson ever really sinks in. But we definitely know where we're going to work on, what we need to work on for the next launch. So it's been fantastic.
Yeah, and we hope it's been useful, our warts and all experience and story, and we'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the Cracking Copy podcast with Ella Hoyos and Minnie McBride.
Don't miss out on future episodes by making sure you hit subscribe down below to keep up with all our podcasts.
And more details and resources are in our show notes.
So we'll see you next time.